Everybody in the room knows we've had a number of policy changes, so I want to go through just some basic things there. But I want to talk a little bit about the market facilitation program and some of the complaints, and then you know how that thing has played out, and then we'll talk a little bit about markets. Okay, so the MFP or market facilitation program, we had round one. Now we have 2.0 that started officially July 29th. The program is set up specifically. It has some payment limits, $500,000 in total per applicant. And your AGI less than $900,000 unless you have greater than 75% of your income is coming from the farm. So, this was sort of a nod to the big farms, that those are actual big farms, and AGI is not not a threshold there. Now, last year in the first round in MFP 1.0, there were a lot of prevented planted acres that got left out in the cold because they didn't have planted acres. And so that was a big deal. This year, prevented planted is getting at least a little bit there in terms of that $15 per acre for unplanted acres ineligible for payments. So, or unplanted acres are ineligible for payments. So if you didn't plant anything or didn't attempt to plant anything, it's ineligible. But if you got prevented planted, you get something out of the deal. Now, this is the part, and we'll look at it in a minute. The payments are based on a fixed county payment rate times the aggregate planted acres for those eligible crops. So it's not a crop-specific payment. It's an aggregate based on a sort of a weighted average of the fixed payment rates for the different commodities, adjusted for, weighted by the plantings in those counties. And that's created a bunch of consternation. So we'll see the biggest payment rates or biggest payments are going to those counties that were dominant in cotton. So if we look at Texas, you can see here, the darker this color, the higher the payment. And so you range. We have several counties out here that have maxed out at $150 an acre. Some of those here in the central High Plains are in that $120 to $140, $100 per acre. And so, but you can see that as you move away from some of these central counties, those payment rates drop off pretty substantially. And, I get a lot of course, I didn't create the formula, so people don't throw tomatoes at me, but we get a lot of questions from producers who are in these other counties. Why is this the case? Why, if I'm in one county, is my payment rate half of what it is in my other county that I may live or farm in? So, that MFP is based on that weighted. So if we look across the different, this is Joe Glauber, who used to be the chief economist for USDA, now works for IFPRI, but it still does a lot of this kind of stuff. And what he did was, we have a total payment, and it's been allocated across these different crops. And you can see here, upland cotton at about $98 per acre on average for cotton. Peanuts are a little bit higher at 102, but there's a lot of these crops that are way lower than cotton and peanuts. And so if you're a soybean or a corn guy or one of those, especially in the Midwest, they look at some of these payment rates in the South and they're like, wait, what? What happened? So what I've done, or what I try to do, is to explain this process a little bit. One is the weighting, right? So the weighting comes in by planted acres. So those counties, like in the central High Plains, that are very, very high proportion cotton, they're weighting here at $98 an acre, and then you have these, and that's just an average, so that's not the total. But you see sorghums down here at $61 an acre. So counties that have a lot of sorghum in them, or a lot of corn at $60 an acre, that pulls that average down across that county relative to the cotton. Okay, so usually if I have a conversation with somebody or a group, they immediately go, okay, I guess I kind of understand what that is. But why is cotton $98 an acre and soybeans is at $65 an acre? Aren't soybeans the headline commodity here that have been hammered by, you know, the trade dispute. Well, before we get to that question, one of the other questions that, as an economist, we always ask is, okay, does policy influence decisions? All right, so here was the Purdue Ag Barometer came out not very long ago, and nearly 60% of farmers expected to get an MFP 3.0 payment. So we know from the get-go that MFP is impacting farmer decisions. It there's no doubt. Now, the way that if they stick with the design that MFP has, it shouldn't alter the way we think about relative crops. That should still be a pricing decision. But it certainly is adding money into the system, and then it's creating an expectation that that is going to exist. Now, we'll talk about some issues coming up in terms of financing and things like that I think are very important. But this graph is an interesting graph because it sort of illustrates what's on this axis is the percentage change in U.S. ag exports. So whether we increase or decreased exports after the trade war began. And then this is the share of China in those U.S. ag exports. So if you look at sorghum way down here, their very high proportion of exports have gone to China. Whereas cotton, yes, it's, you know, but we're only, you know, probably about 20 to 25% of U.S. cotton goes to China. The rest of it's going to Vietnam, Bangladesh, other places. So cotton is a much more, has a much more diversified export market than sorghum does. But why is cotton getting this pain? Look at, you know, the price percentage or percentage change in U.S. exports is only down a little bit, where sorghum is down a lot. You know, so this, you would figure this price would be, or this dollar value should be higher. It's the trade impact was much higher. The concentration in China is, you know, that's the reason we have that trade impact. Here's wheat. Look at wheat. It got a $36 payment. It had actually increased ag exports. And so this is why you see a lot of sort of consternation. Of course, we all know how this works. Is the government sets on, you know, Congress sets out to do something, or the administration in this case sets out to do something 6 months ago, and things change in the meantime, but they've got to fix a policy. So there's some stuff that goes on. So why do we see this, and over here at soybeans and, you know, the drops, and of course this is this last year, so soybeans was already at a rock bottom in terms of exports. But why do we see that? Well, so what I try to tell people about cotton, what is different about cotton than soybeans, is cotton is a second round effect in this trade war, not a first round effect. So in 2018, the U.S. placed its tariffs on Chinese goods. China retaliated with its tariffs on U.S. exports of agricultural products. We saw a huge drop in soybean price. Okay, so we know that in the first year, soybeans really took it on the chin. They were the primary beneficiary, if you will, of this effect. There was a drop in cotton price, but it was a smaller drop in cotton price in that first year. And so, you know, the effect on cotton was relatively small in year one. When I say relatively, it doesn't mean it wasn't an important one. It's just relative to soybeans, it was a small impact. But what happened? Well, all those soybean growers in the Southeast and Mid-South who faced that soybean drop in price goes, oh, wait a minute, here's cotton, it's trading at 78 cents a pound. I can grow cotton. So all of a sudden we saw in the planting intentions report this shift into cotton. And then we saw an even bigger shift in the actual planted acres than what we saw in the planting intentions report. And so then the bottom dropped out of U.S. price because we go from a 19 million bale crop expectation to a 23 million bale crop expectation and probably a 25 to 30% increase in expected carryout stocks, all those kinds of things. So this second round effect is what hit cotton in this year. So, you know, the MFP 2.0 was a recognition that this thing is having secondary effects on these other crops. So when we get into this debate about who should be getting the money out of MFP, you know, I think the way the government's done it as haphazardly as the government does things, it actually makes some sense. The move over to the MFP 2.0 and the reallocation of some of those payments, I think, are probably justified given where we're at. Now, many of you know Kevin Brinkley. Kevin and I went to school together. We've known each other for 25 years, and so we love to argue about stuff. Now, Kevin totally disagrees with this thing right here. My contention is what happened in year one really wasn't a tariff effect. And he says, no, it was. It was a tariff effect. And so he has this graph, which is it's a great graph. This is where the tariffs were. And then you see the drop in price here immediately after the tariffs. And then we trend down over here until we get to the next year and we get this next big drop. Well, my contention is this is wrong. Those bars represent WASDE's expectations, in this case of Chinese consumption. And so immediately after the tariffs were implemented, WASDE, you can see, didn't even change their expectation of Chinese consumption. And then what happened? Well, those of us in the industry who watch textile processing were saying back here that this number was wrong, that the demand estimates that the market was relying on from WASDE USDA weren't correct because yarn stocks were already accumulating. Bangladesh, India, other places couldn't move yarn into China. Prices were having to drop, so they were backing off on their consumption planning back here. So my contention is this part of this is really sort of actual demand driven. This over here is actual tariff driven. Either way, it's an academic question. It doesn't really matter that much, but it's an interesting question about the dynamics of when you have two pieces moving, you have tariffs and then you have changes in demand. How do you disentangle those two? Well, the Trump administration basically said, probably rightly, we don't care. Here was the price. Here is the price. There's your payment. Okay, so that's how it arrives at that. And so those price effects are real. And you see that, you know, Chinese consumption, we're being hampered by drops in Chinese consumption as well as these other factors that are happening. The tariff is interesting. But I'll show you something. This just reflects what we already saw was this declining expectation in global consumption through the WASDE reports. That's what that is. Now, here's an interesting chart. Okay, this is weekly export sales, so you can see this stuff bouncing around, you know, from week to week and the seasonal effects that go on. But you can see here's what we used to see in terms of Chinese exports, you know, in the 150,000 bales per week type of export number. And then we're down here in the, 40 to 50,000 bale per week export number. But the important thing about this chart is this is 2014, not 2018 when the tariff started. That's 2014. So if you look out here, the tariffs haven't changed Chinese consumption all that much or Chinese imports of U.S. cotton all that much. Now, you can see at the tail end out here in 2019, those numbers have dropped off, and we see that in the price effects and everything else. But really, through the time span, they're still importing 4 million bales, 4.5 million bales of cotton, and the U.S. is the lion's share of those exports. So China, I think, the point here when we talk about global markets, China is not going to be our customer for cotton in the long term. They're still going to buy cotton, but that's not where the growth is occurring. This is Bangladesh. So here we are down here. Now notice the scale's different. So it's smaller early on, but here, now in the last few years, and especially since the tariffs kicked in, more cotton is going to Bangladesh. If I was to put Vietnam up here, it would look almost identical, except bigger numbers. So now we're in the, we're in the 50,000 bale per week type of export number to Bangladesh. We're in the 70 to 80,000 export per week to Vietnam. So the Southeast Asian markets are probably going to be where we're going to get our, in terms of cotton, where we're going to get our exports. And an increasing amount, East Africa, places like Ethiopia, Djibouti, other places in even in West Africa, where cotton consumption is growing, investment is growing. But right now, Southeast Asia is our major market. So China's not the be-all, end-all, unlike with soybeans, right? So soybeans, that was it. So this tariff, we talk about the tariffs and the destruction of supply chains, global supply chains. It's important for everybody. The longer this trade war goes on, the more difficult it will be to rebuild global supply chains dealing with China, because countries don't trade with countries. Companies trade with companies. And so when a company is forced to find a new source of cotton and a textile mill decides, oh, I get used to a new growth of cotton, it's very hard to get them to go back in the other direction. I laugh, I joke that I told, I worked with a medical supply company back during when the price went up to $1.80, a pound, and they were getting concerned about raw materials. And so I sat down and was discussing, they were making gauze for hospitals, and they were buying California cotton. Their spec was base grade, but they were buying California cotton. I'm like, I don't know why you're buying California cotton to make gauze. That doesn't make any sense. So, that is because that textile mill manager was comfortable with using California cotton in their processing. And price was really not that important. It was important, but not that important. So I think, for us, for cotton, the trade war is going to deteriorate those. But it's even much more important for corn, beans, and some of the other crops where they had most of their exports going to China. So, just looking forward here a little bit, this purple line represents the Texas Tech forecast of U.S. Exports. And so you can see here we're at 16.5 million. That's 17.5 million bales or 7.2 million bales total cotton. Upland cotton, that's about 16.5 million bales of exports. And this is WASDE. Okay, so this is where WASDE is at this point. And the question is can we ship 16.5 million bales? Well, physically we can. We've done it. I mean, we've exported 17 million bales before. And the industry here on the high plains and in the ports can handle a 17 million bale crop quite easily. But the question is, where is this going? Bangladesh is reducing its imports, Vietnam is reducing its imports. There's enough stocks out there in yarns that it's creating this problem. So I don't know if we're gonna make this number. And if we don't make this number, what that means is we're gonna have a 21 to 22 million bale crop this year. It means more is gonna go into carry out. We're gonna see a reduced farm price. So WASDE comes out at noon today. So I'm not betting one way or another against WASDE, but I do think that WASDE has been traditionally a little overly optimistic on exports. I think in part to try to keep those stocks from accumulating in the numbers that will force that price even lower. So we'll see. We'll see what happens today, what their September baseline looks like going from there. All right, so one of the things in terms of markets, these three charts, this is cotton, this is soybeans, and this is corn. The one thing you should pick up from this chart right now is that none of these look good. I mean, none of them look good. But, the beans has, kind of recovered that a little bit, but really I think that when we get down to it, we're talking about $7 beans for next year. We're at 387 in corn. I think we're going to end up at 345, 350 in corn. And here we are at 60 some odd cents for, this is all 2020, 60 some odd cents for cotton. If we don't get a trade deal or some of these numbers run against us, we could be looking at fives again for 2020. Now, the bad thing about this piece right here is that if this price kind of holds till February, then it gets built into the insurance price. And once it gets built into the insurance price, that's what the bank's going to pencil in. So if that's a 54 cent insurance price, The bank's going to pencil that in. 54 cents doesn't cash flow for most people. So, you know, that's not a, that's an equity dig for sure. And so what happens on all of these, though, here's the thing, is that when we look at corn and beans at the relative price ratios, even at 62 to 63 cents, there is absolutely no incentive for a Delta or a Mid-South cotton farmer to go back to corn or beans at those prices. It's none. So all those acres we picked up in the Mid-South and Southeast, there's no reason for people to rotate out of those cotton acres to back to one of these other crops. So that, you know, except in just raw production costs. There's a lot of upfront production costs in cotton that you don't have in beans and some of these other things. So, you know, they may want to reduce the risk by putting a less input intensive crop out there. But if we don't get some help, especially from corn, but maybe from beans, you know, we could still have a very high acreage number, which means this lower price range that we've been in persists for another year. I know that's great news. Lloyd's sitting out there going, I told you to tell me something good when we talked. So I'm you know, hopefully what I'm hoping, so the Trump administration has done one thing. They've announced a delay of the additional tariffs as a goodwill gesture until mid-October, you know, to try to sweeten the pot, if you will, for the negotiations when the Chinese come in October for the trade negotiator, the trade deal negotiation. You know, assuming if we get a trade deal, this whole thing changes, because all of a sudden soybeans are going to turn around substantially, because, you know, right now we can still produce soybeans as cheaply as they can in South America. We can get them to China. We can be cost competitive. And it's a commodity, and we can move that product. And if we can move that product, this thing goes this direction, this thing goes that direction. Because the more acres that we pull out of the Mid-South and Southeast back into beans, the higher the price for cotton, other things equal. The downside on cotton, the thing that we've got to look for, is the general economy. If we're going to, you know, there are signs of recessionary pressures building. We'll see if those, they're not all, you know, clearly saying we're going to, you know, you'll hear some people say, oh, the yield curve is inverted and we're definitely going to have a recession. That's not true. There's a lot of other signs that indicate we don't necessarily think we're going to be in a recession. But the economy globally is going to be weaker in 2020 than it is in 2019 if we maintain a trade war with China. So, you know, cotton is a semi-durable good. People can delay their consumption on cotton, which is what's already happening to some extent, and so it persists in those low prices. So we're hoping for, you know, a trade deal, but it's got to be a good trade deal. You know, that's one of the things. You can't these numbers, I'm not even going to try to get it, but right here, if you look at FAPRI, 1920, you know, every crop is bouncing at or below the reference price. So in beans, you're talking about an expectation of about $7.80 with an $8.40 PLC price. With corn, you're talking about $3.40 with a $3.70 price. Upland cotton, $59.07. Well, the seed cotton reference at seed cotton price at 30 cents with a 36 cent reference price. So every crop is going to trigger a PLC payment coming up, every crop. We're just structurally in a low price mode. And this is all assuming, all these forecasts are assuming the trade war continues as it is right now. So if we turn that around, that can change that dramatically. So again, none of the crops perform well. When we look at all of the crops in terms of a cash flow, none of them perform well. Some are relatively better than others. All crops are likely to be below their PLC price, and all of those projections fly out the window if we get a trade deal in October. I mean, this is a totally different market if we get a trade deal in October. So, Trump administration scheduled a meet in China. Could we get a trade deal? Well, here's the thing. And I've said this before to some, you know, some of the congressional staffers and people that I talked to. I said, you know, you might as well start talking about MFP 3.0. because it takes long enough to get that process going for us to get a resolution. And the banks, of course, a lot of South Texas people are already thinking about getting crops ready to plant and things like that, and we're sitting here without any kind of trade deal, without any kind of MFP payment. So the bank doesn't have anything to pencil in terms of additional income to cover costs. But for the rest of us, the rest of the U.S., if we don't get something, if there's not at least sort of an agreement at the administrative level that they're going to do an MFP 3.0, then, we're kind of sitting out there without any additional cash flow with these really low prices that come in. The PLC will help. I mean, you'll get a little bit of a PLC payment, but it's definitely not where we would have been. It's probably time to start thinking about that. In the short run, anything that we get in terms of short run relief is going to be a weather event that occurs over the next 3 months. So if there's some big weather event in India or there's some big weather event in South America, those things are going to influence, those prices going out in the next couple of months. But, everything else is basically baked into the pie. There's not a lot of way out of what we're doing here. I get a lot of questions from media people about farmers' support of the Trump administration's, activities here. And I always say, I don't know what a farmer thinks. I'm not a farmer. But here's what I see. And that is, my economist colleagues are famous for saying, and correctly, that no tariff is a good tariff. There's no such thing as a good tariff, because all tariffs lead to reductions in economic activity, reductions in prices, all those sorts of things. But as I'd like to remind my economic colleagues, my pure economist colleagues, is life isn't always about the gains and losses from an economic policy. There are political considerations that have to be weighed into the situation. And in this case, you have to weigh the costs and benefits of continuing to let China do what China has been doing, which is not good, right? So they're a malfeasant actor in the economic world. So we could continue to let them do that and continue to ride the horse that we have. Or you can take a stand and you can try to change the economic outcome and get them to liberalize and reduce their subsidy rates and reduce their interference in terms of tariffs and quotas and that sort of stuff. I don't know what the answer to, whether it's worth it or whether it's not worth it, and I don't know that anybody knows the answer to that question, but I do think, a lot of times people think about that too narrowly, and so what they end up with is either absolutely the best thing that's ever happened, or this is absolutely the worst thing that's ever happened, which is often how we divide our politics nowadays. But the reality is there's a lot of gray area in there about, is this smart? Well, from an purely economic standpoint, probably not. We're all paying, farmers are paying the price more than any other group out there, and as a concentrated group. And so they're the ones that are probably the most likely to have a strong opinion about it. And so far, the Trump administration has maintained enough political capital to keep doing it. We'll see how long that keeps going. But we can always keep our fingers crossed if we get a trade deal. Okay, I'll stop there. Any questions? Okay, so the question is China's cotton consumption going up, down, staying the same, regardless of where it's coming from? It's flat. It's gone up a little bit over time. It's still in the 40 million bale range, which means that they produce about 35 million bales, so that means they have to import about 5 million bales. That's gone up a little bit, and we expect it to go up over time. But we just expect the growth rate there to be lower than it is in other places. Other places are going to catch up. Because there's a lot of Chinese investment that's moving out of China to Southeast Asia looking for cheaper labor markets, believe it or not. But that's what they're doing. So the question is that it would, because some, a lot of the base chemicals or base products that we use in agriculture come out of China, will these things change? And the answer is yes. I mean, I think the if we maintain these tariffs, we got to realign those supply chains because we can't continue to pay the tariff and keep getting it. It means that whatever we buy is going to be more expensive than it was before the tariffs are implemented, because if somebody else could have produced it cheaper, we would have bought it from them in the first place. So that's, you know, that's sort of the economic loss thing, is that no matter what, it's going to cost us more. We also have, and sort of the interesting question is, we also have in this next round tariffs on imported finished goods, so textiles and apparel. So right now, what's happened, what, you know, a lot of people in the industry are upset about, you know, especially in the political realm of this, is that the tariffs going into China on cotton are reducing U.S. cotton going to China, but it's not reducing the amount of cotton and containing products coming back from China into the U.S. So what we're ended up doing is importing a lot of foreign cotton back into the U.S. in the form of textiles and apparel. So, you know, a lot of people have been arguing there needs to be an equivalent sort of tariff over there. But, you know, that's what we get in this tit-for-tat escalation, and it's not necessarily a good thing. But I do think it's going to change supply chains. We're going to have to source some of those materials from different locations simply because they're just going to get priced out of the market coming from China. So the question is are, you know, are we, are U.S. products making it to China via another, a third party, or and the answer is yes. Some of those products are getting there through transshipment. Vietnam is a popular transshipment point. So it goes there, they unload it off a ship, they put it back on a ship, and then they drive it up there. But the other thing that's happened, especially in cotton, over time, is more cotton, U.S. cotton, is going into China in the form of yarn. As opposed to raw cotton. So it's going to Vietnam, it's being spun, or Bangladesh, it's being spun, and then it's going up to China in the form of yarn or fabric or, you know, something like that. So yes, there's some of this sort of backdoor, you know, ways of getting that product in. And, you know, remember too that, so for the longest time, I don't think it's true today, but it, when China first put on the 10% tariff on U.S. cotton, it was still cheaper for a Chinese textile mill to buy a bale of U.S. cotton, pay the tariff and transport costs, than it was to buy a bale of Chinese cotton and spend it in the mill. So there, that's why there still has been a good bit of exports of cotton to China anyway, because even that, the textile mills are willing to pay the extra price simply because it's worth it to them in terms of the quality and other characteristics. But yeah, definitely there's a lot of, you know, what we call, you know, just transshipment kinds of things to circumvent that. Anything else? All right, Rudy, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Glad to see everybody.